Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion.
All right. It's Saturday, November 20th, 2021. We had a very, very special eclipse of the moon this week, and all kinds of things going on in the news, in the prisons, outside the prisons. Revolution is in the air. Some would call it evolution. Either way, I'll take it. Whatever you got, 646-716-8652. Don't forget to press 1. We'll take calls, and we'll talk about the current issues we got going. We have a homeless camp that was swept on Paseo. This is the war against gentrification, and it is a fight. It is maybe we can get Lulu to call in and give us a little bit of an update on that sweep. We've got KC Tenants. They had 200 people at their rally. Mayor Quentin Lucas also attended. And those are going to be the issues we're going to be covering tonight. There was a Rittenhouse verdict, but I covered the story prior to the verdict because I felt that the issues, and this is a civil suit, so it's not over. It's not over. At Seaville, it looks like the crying Nazi and Richard Spencer are going down like the Titanic. January 6th, the real estate gal from Texas, I don't know if I can say that. Is that okay to say real estate gal? The Cossack. You would refer to him as the Cossack that was at January 6th. Is that correct? And I got Mike around here somewhere.
I'm here.
Awesome. Glad to have you.
Your news clip is a little over halfway done on the homeless. I'll have it ready for your audience in just a little bit. Just checking in.
Okay.
I gotta throw something at you. What do you really think of the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict? I mean, and this whole comedy show coming out of Kenosha. What do you think of this shit? This is sick.
Well, the white working class, they're feeding the white working class red meat. I mean, it's a fact that the empire is over in 2030. Never mind climate change or anything like that. The Chinese have set up trade with Africa that the United States just thought was insignificant. And there's no way the United States can keep up with China now. China has anti-ballistic missiles that can take out their aircraft. So it's looking like we're going to be sharing half of the Pacific with the Chinese now. And apparently there's a saying that the United States was an empire built on wood and coal. Had you ever heard that?
Blood and steel. I've heard of different things. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It was just interesting that China has rushed to this third stage of industrialism, and or the third industrial revolution, and the United States, they're fucking talking to spirits and shit, you know. I mean, we got fucking Ayatollahs running the goddamn thing.
So you think in Kenosha, Wisconsin, it was just a thing that everything will be all right or something? I don't know, to the white working class. I don't know. I don't consider the white working class one block of reactionary politics, but you know they've done quite a show for themselves. I mean, since January 6th, I mean, as a bunch of unorganized slobs, you know, who really just follow whatever leader they is in charge. But I mean, at least a large number of them did that way. But I mean, this verdict. I mean, I guess you don't expect any justice from a court.
Well, no, yeah, absolutely right. I mean, those comrades are, you know, there's a fountain of blood that flows from the martyrs, and you know, they're with the greats. They're with Frank Little and Joe Hill and Elizabeth Early Flynn, although she died of old age, and Ralph Chaplin died of old age. But not all of us get the opportunity to die of old age, and I think that's you know, understanding that is probably the first step of movement building. We don't have to necessarily be suicide bombers or anything like that, but there's times where the KKK catches up with us, we get cornered, we give up the mortal coil. This is kind of a situation where a KKK Kyle Rittenhouse practiced an attack and went through with it. And the idea that it's accepted that he's a medic because he was dangling a lunchbox down, you know.
Yeah.
Because he was too busy to hold a rifle. I mean, he was at Port Arms. What is at Port Arms? And Port Arms is get ready to kill. And the idea that somehow him being a police cadet, makes him somehow a rational thinker in a situation like this, had he been a rational thinker, he wouldn't even shown up. You know, love thy neighbor,
true.
You know.
Or he would, have been there to, well, you know, I think you're hitting on some points, but just from a stupid point, I mean, it was obvious they were provocative, and there was evidently an arrangement, a pre-arrangement with the Kenosha police. They were going to push the scattered crowd, that's what I'll call it, post-curfew. They were going to push that scattered crowd down Sheridan Avenue or Sheridan Street to the used car places where vigilantes were sitting down there with their guns. And from what I saw, and I really watched the trial very closely, you know, that why did Kyle and this one war vet all of them full dressed out with their vests and their guns and all their shit go up from their position and walk through the crowd of demonstrators and protesters? And to me, it was obvious that they were out to antagonize people, and they were on the roof of one of the used car lots with their guns, and were laser, you know, pointing their lasers at the crowd. I mean, all those were very provocative gestures to incite a riot, if not homicide, or both. And I tend to think that the verdict is going to make it much more difficult, because these cause players, COS players, these people that play out their blood fantasies are going to come out more and more often. I understand that even in Kansas City, Missouri, I have one anecdote passed on by an observer who was attended a Black Lives Matter, I believe it was a Black Lives Matter, or a homeless thing up there last summer. It was in, you know, the 2020, summer of 2020, that there were these same kind of militia type guys up there, and they were one guy, this guy who told me the story, he said he went up to one of them, and the guy said, "Well, it's here making sure that there's freedom of speech." And that really confused me a year ago. Why would you have a militia guy standing up there with the other guys? There were several of them in Kansas City, Missouri. And the guy told me that he got the guy say, "Oh, I'm not from Kansas City." He traveled up there with his militia-type buddies. I don't even like to call them militia. These armed vigilantes came up there and was just standing there with their guns and their whatever you want to call it, their get-up, watching the Black Lives Matter thing in Kansas City. Now, that's a little close to home. But that's sort of – I got a feeling you're going to see more and more of these kind of vigilantes coming out now. I think it's going to be sort of a – I think it's a bad thing. Did you ever see anything like that? You can go to those demonstrations in Kansas City. Did you see anything like that?
Well, the anti-Sharia law – the anti-Sharia law people – the organizers, one was from Omaha, the other was from St. Charles, Missouri. And so they had a pretty good social media reach, so there were people coming in all over this. We talked to one guy, he had an old Confederate tattoo. You could tell, I mean, by his age, he probably had it since he was, you know, a teenager. And he had no idea the rally. He just thought it was just like a historical reenactment or get together to talk about, you know, just, you know, Quantrell or whatever the hell, you know, but he actually walked away. He actually walked away and in disbelief. So
was he openly,
so,
was
you
he
know,
openly carrying, was he, excuse me, was he openly, openly carrying a weapon?
No,
a firearm
but,
or a
but
long gun.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He just really just came to check it out. He just saw something pop up on his social media. This particular individual. Now, no, a lot of them had like sidearms and things like that mostly. But there was a dislike between like the neo-Nazis didn't like the Proud Boys, and the Proud Boys were drinking milk, and one of them was vomiting the hot milk, and it was pretty strange. You know, it was like, oh, Europeans digest milk. And it's like, well, no, it's the Holstein cow that's the problem. Because there are, you know, the traditional Jersey cow is digestible. There's just different enzymes in the milk.
Carl,
yes.
So did you or did you not see people carrying long guns and firearms publicly in Kansas City during the Black Lives Matter demonstration? So they were. How many of them were up there?
There were about 10. But see, they'll walk around. They'll go out a block and walk around, and they have pretty good radio communication. the hierarchical structure. I don't want to go into too much about their tactics, but. Yeah, there were like, you know, like a squad is five people. So there was at least two squads.
And they were standing around watching the demonstrators.
Oh, they were up behind the wall. Yeah, they were up behind the wall, but for the most part they had their rifles on their shoulder. But to be decked out in fatigues and boots and caps and be over the top. Cause I mean, there's stories when you look at the removal of the Native Americans, you know, and those attacks were quite similar.
Yeah.
They might've had cannons instead, but I tell you what, you gave these guys a cannon, they'd probably show up with one.
They'd show up. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So what do you think? Do you think that means it's going to be more, more and more of this now? Is this going to cause a rebirth with Kyle Killer Kyle from Kenosha being found not guilty on all counts? Do you think that there'll be more of these now? When we show up in different places, these people will show up too?
It's like, I think when Trump at the debate said, Proud Boys, stand down and stand back.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a stand down, stand back kind of thing. And I'm trying to look up Princeton, New Jersey tonight. There's a White Lives Matter outside campus there. And so we haven't got any reports yet other than it's taking place or they announced it a few days ago. And there's a European Heritage Association in New Jersey. And now WABC out of New York, that's where Rush Limbaugh come out of, that's where Sean Hannity came out of. They were doing white supremacist messaging 40 years ago. So for
we're talking now. I just want to keep it now. I mean, I heard Portland, Oregon had a sort of a reaction demonstration by people, and Oakland, California. I've got news reports and YouTube of people gathering in you know, opposition to this verdict on so you're saying, and I mean, it's not just one big monster of a reaction. I mean, there were Portland, I think Seattle, these were small. I think the one in Portland or Seattle, I forget which one, was like less than 80 people, but there were still 80 people that I think showed up. So this is going to intimidate? Is this going to slow down people from coming out and protesting outrages?
Well, I think we should give it a little time for it to cool down, because you've got people like Peter Thiel that's funding this, you know, and Peter Thiel, he wants to go back to a feudal system where, say, the other billionaire wanted a fascist system. So that's where the right is different, and it's a big difference, you know. And you know,
and then you have Brunswick, Georgia, on Armand Arbery. All these trials are being watched by millions and millions of people in this country, and for various reasons of different persuasions. And this is getting ready to start up. And then you have the Charlottesville trial, where you know, I guess there's no criminal charges, but it's all a civil lawsuit trying to bankrupt. I think you were talking about Richard Spencer. That was Charlotte's. You call it Seaville, but most people know it as Charlottesville, right? And you said that they're, I mean, all these little, these court battles are turning into, people are watching this, Carl, all over the world, really.
They're watching it all over the world. We're seeing a civil rights brewing that's never been seen on the planet. And it's being driven by the women's movement and by labor. And this time they're working in concert with one another. And we're against the wall. You know, I'm trying to. Yeah, I don't want to be too apocalyptic about any of this, but only labor can save the planet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to. I sort of interrupted that because your opening, because I was, you know, I was sort of real curious to see what people thought, because it's very accessible. These trials are on all the on television, PBS. By the way, PBS is doing nonstop of these court proceedings, and they do not edit. They put it up on YouTube, and you can see the crime photos, the autopsy pictures of the people that they've killed, and it's quite. It's not censored. Court TV is more accessible to everybody out here in the country. But it, if you ask me, it's sort of like Fox News, of court news, compared to the CBS NewsHour live feed of these hearings, of these trials going on. As I said, because they show the let the tape play the profanities, and they show the actual evidentiary photographs of the victims, the dead victims and stuff. So if you're out there and you're stuck on the CBS NewsHour for those trials, if you want to actually see what the jury is seeing, it's very interesting. It's, I think that's court TV by sanitizing it because of the FCC. They're really, I mean, you don't see any of that stuff on court TV on mainstream television. I just wanted to throw that in. Now you've got your news clip on homeless is ready to play. Do you want me to play that for you, Carl, and your audience?
Yeah, let's talk about this. It starts with a story about human trafficking in Kansas City. There's a grand jury that started on that. Goes into the sweeps of the homeless camp at Paseo.
Let's listen to it, and then you can tell us what more about it. There's more information.
FBI believes sex trafficking victims may be located in Kansas City. KMBC, Channel 9. This was written by KMBC 9 news staff. November 18, 2021. This is Carl G. The story begins in Santa Ana, California. Sex trafficking charges were announced today against leaders of the Philippines-based church, the Kingdom of Jesus Christ. The FBI believes victims were located in Kansas City. An indictment unsealed Thursday charges founder of a Philippine-based church and two top administrators of orchestrating a sex trafficking operation, coerced girls and young women to have sex with the church leaders under threats of eternal damnation. The indictment expands on allegations made earlier this year against three Los Angeles-based administrators of the church, which is known as the Kingdom of Jesus Christ. The nine defendants named in a 42-count indictment are charged with participating in a labor trafficking scheme that brought church members to the United States via fraudulently obtained visas and forced the members to solicit donations for a bogus charity. The superseding indictment also outlines KOJC's nationwide soliciting operations, which allegedly give rise to additional criminal conduct, including forced labor, labor trafficking, document servitude, marriage fraud, and money laundering. The KOJC administrators maintain the legal immigration status of workers who prove capable of meeting daily cash solicitation quotas by fraudulently obtaining student visas for such workers or by forcing them to enter into sham marriages with other KOJC workers who had already obtained United States citizenship, the indictment states. A sex trafficking conspiracy charge alleged the indictment carries a statutory minimum penalty of life in federal prison. As part of the ongoing investigation, the FBI is encouraging potential victims of anyone with information about KOJC activities to contact investigators. The ongoing investigation into KOJC is being led by FBI, which is receiving substantial assistance from Homeland Security investigators, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Fraud Detection and National Security Unit, and the U.S. Department of State of Diplomacy, Security Service, and the IRS criminal investigation. City sweeps Paseo homeless camp. By Michael Bushnell from Northeast News, posted by the admin November 19, 2020. This comes on the heel of last night's machete fight in Windsor Avenue and Gladstone Boulevard between two homeless men. The victim in the conflict was transported to an area hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The suspect still remains at large. A Public Works employee on the scene indicated that on Tuesday of this week, roughly 18 homeless assistant agencies were on the scene at the camp offering services to those individuals who desired to get off street. Warnings were also given of the impending camp sweep, while a number of people decided to leave the camp and go elsewhere. A majority stayed until the bitter end. Some of those displayed simply picked up their belongings and tents and moved to a public sidewalk on Admiral Boulevard next to Hope Faith Ministries. A Hope Faith caseworker named Gabe defended the illegal encampment, blocking the public sidewalk, and deferred blame to the city for not enforcing the law. We attempted to reach out to Hope Faith, but the voicemail box we were directed to was full and did not allow us to leave a message. Hope Faith recently backed out of the city-led homeless assistance project, citing lack of funds for wraparound services for the city houseless population. We asked public work officials on the scene about Admiral Boulevard Camp, which blocks a public sidewalk and the Belvedere Camp. They deferred to the Parks Department, who has recently begun placing new signage along boulevards and on areas parks citing park hours and the city ordinance that prohibits camping on public property. Per Ordinance 5107,
No person shall put or keep or maintain or occupy any tent or covered wagon as a habitation or a place living or lodging, either temporary or otherwise, upon any vacant or unclosed lot or grounds within the city, unless such person is the owner of such lot or ground or has a lease from the owner thereof. Park is closed daily from midnight to 5 a.m. This one's from Jason Kurtz at KMBC Channel 9. Carl G. reading. KC tenants hold town hall meeting to discuss the housing problem in Kansas City. Kansas City housing crisis took center stage Thursday night. It was the focus of House the People Town Hall hosted by KC Tenants. The tenant union wants safe and affordable housing for everyone in Kansas City. About 100 people attended the town hall meeting discussing what more can be done to fix the housing problem. KC Tenants laid out many solutions they see to fix the problem, including social housing, which leaders described as a permanent and accessible housing controlled by the community. Mayor Quentin Lucas attended the town hall. He said he's willing to work to see social housing in Kansas City, but says it would take change in Missouri law, work with state officials. Right now, it feels the city is more focused on the people they want to be here and not the people already here and have been here for generations, says Brian Holby, a community organizer for KC Tenants. But both the mayor and KC Tenants hope to work together. I appreciate that this group stays active. I disagree with a lot of the tactics sometimes, but I don't disagree with the outcome we seek. And we need to get people in safe and affordable housing in the long term, says Mayor Quentin Lucas. Renter State Housing Co-ops could be the answer to Kansas City's affordable housing problem. Beck Shackelford, Nawanenganga. A model where renters would own and govern the buildings they live in would create community accountability and lower the barrier for low-income tenants to achieve stable housing, according to organizers. More than 200 renters from around Kansas City gathered Thursday night to discuss new approaches for creating stable, affordable housing for low-income tenants. Citywide tenant union KC Tenants hosted the town hall to rally support for social housing, which they defined as housing that puts people over profits. Social housing is a concept that he had some success in European countries, but has largely been considered too radical in the United States, where it's often associated with public housing reserved for low-income residents in high-poverty areas. The area has gained attention recently due to part of the presidential campaign of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Tenants say one way to combat unfair housing is to create housing co-ops where tenants own and govern the buildings they live in. They're proposing the properties be built on land the city already owns through Kansas City Land Bank. Brandon Henderson, the KC tenant leader who grew up in unstable housing, said the city could afford social housing by redirecting money from other departments. Our city spends almost $250,000 alone on police, and you're going to tell me y'all cannot afford to house every person in the city, said Henderson. You're lying. Henderson said co-op style housing with a tight-knit community is what he dreamed of as a kid. Janae Manley, another KC tenant leader, said social housing would be life-changing for her too. Manley said she was forced to stay in an abusive relationship to house herself and her children because she couldn't afford her own place. Single moms wouldn't have to choose to be with abusers, said Manley. We would be able to choose to just be moms, to love our babies. We would be able to have the space to be valued as a whole people and enjoy our kids. I don't want us to struggle and donate plasma to be able to pay for their damn bills. Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas also has an appearance Thursday night. Lucas told attendees he was open to the idea of social housing, but it would be a slow process. KC Tenants rallied at City Hall last month to protest Lucas' proposed affordable housing trust fund, which they called a developer slush fund that did not resemble their own version of the People's Housing Trust Fund. Their version called for a governing board, which gave renters a say in how the money was spent. The legislation that passed did not expressly give tenants a seat at the table, but did include language requiring the city managers to establish an advisory board with members appointed by the mayor. Manley said while the issues for renters have been magnified by the pandemic, renters have been struggling to maintain secure and affordable housing for decades. We had tenants who were constantly living in crisis, who were told the only way safe is to stay home, said Manley. Meanwhile, people are being evicted from their homes. Illegal evictions have been happening the whole time the pandemic has happened, and we know that's because landlords and developers put profits over people's lives.
Wow, that's a lot of good. That's a lot of great news there, Carl.
I mean, a lot of news.
We've really got to do the obvious, you know, listeners. To contact email with your news to Carl for the Abolitionist Hour. You really should. I believe this is the current email address. It's Kansas City at Incarcerated Workers. .org. Is that still a valid email, Carl?
Yes, absolutely. You can contact us by email. incarceratedworkers.org.
Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Spelled out, lower, Kansas City, lower case, KANSASCITY, just Kansas City, all one word, at incarceratedworkers.org, and that's INCARCERATED, workers, all one word, incarceratedworkers.org, Kansas City at incarceratedworkers.org. Now, I know I had to break that in because I noticed I was listening to last week's show, and I noticed, hey, we're not plugging the how to get a hold of us with your news. You may have, you know, we may have people in the audience who have news and they want to send it in about the homeless and the these issues that you're taking on in Kansas City. It's pretty good. Reminder, listeners, when you call in, you really ought to consider, if you want to get on air, you got to punch one. We won't know. And we always have a lot of numbers on the switchboard, and I don't know who they are. So you need to punch one to let us know to put you in. Stan, we'll have some music, and then you've got one more news clip, and I'll put on some music, and then you have another news clip, don't you, Carl? I think you play.
Yeah, I have another one. We got a 2-hour show now, we got 90 minutes left, and so yeah, we're gonna play some music, and then we're gonna do another news clip.
Okay.
And, take it away, Mike.
Okay. There you go. Here we go. Here's a little short.
A one, two, three. Take it from the top.
The bum on the rods is hunted down as an enemy of mankind. The other is driven around to his club, is feted, wined, and dined. And they who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that's bad will greet the other with a winning smile and extend the hand so glad. The bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite. The bum on the plush is a social leech, blood-sucking day and night. The bum on the rods is a load so light that his weight we scarcely feel, but it takes the labor of dozens of folks to furnish the other a meal. As long as we sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there. But rid ourselves of the bum on the plush, and the other will disappear. Then make an intelligent, organized kick. Get rid of the weights that crush. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of the bum on the plush.
Carl, we have Lulu on the phone. Shall I put her on?
Yeah, let's talk to Lulu. Hey, Lulu Livingston.
Hold on just a minute.
How you doing?
Okay, you're
hi,
on.
Hi, Lulu. Lulu's with the KC Homeless Union, and she's going to call in. Lulu, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, awesome. Glad to have you. And you got a new phone. It sounds great.
Oh, good. It's not new, but it works.
Awesome. That's great. And so you've got a couple projects that's keeping you busy night and day. And so we'll let you start with whatever you want to talk about that's on your mind. And Lulu's with KC Homeless Union, and she goes around and keeps up on the camps around the city. And so we're going to let Lulu tell us a little more about that. Lulu?
All right. I do work with the Kansas City Homeless Union. There have been sweeps recently. We did have a sweep over at the Paseo Camp. Now, that isn't actually a union camp yet. They haven't worked with us. But they have little to no organization there. We're not really sure who, if any, leaders are there. They did work with some of the outreach groups that they have, like Hope Faith, things like that. But there was some sort of tiff or something like that. They were talking about having like a standoff or something like that. So there was some high tensions there, and it was very difficult to get outreach to them. They worked very late into the night on that one. And then there's a camp we call Black Box, which was it was swept last night. Black Box was actually on private property, and the owner of the property has decided that he wants to sell, and so he has asked the police to remove everybody. One of the people who lived in that camp had been there for 20 years. He's been on the streets for 22 and had lived on that land for 20. Of course, he has no property rights because they have there's certain special stipulations in your legal rights as far as property is concerned. You know, you got to get mail there, or you got to get bills turned on, da-da-da-da-da. And he did none of that, of course, so technically it doesn't look like he's been there at all. So he has no legal recourse. He just looks like a person staying on someone else's land without permission. So Black Box was swept last night. I read recently in the, I believe it was the LA Times, it was a blurb, it was a just a small paragraph that stated that there is actually a federal regulation that's based on case law that they cannot legally sweep any camps during inclement weather that are on public property. Now, public is a very broad term that could be interpreted in different ways. You could interpret it as strictly federal, strictly local, but local law doesn't supersede Fed. Of course, they're counting on the idea that the homeless have no resources and have no recourse. That's what the Homeless Union is here to try to stop. We're trying to ensure that we have some sort of legal recourse or some sort of action, some sort of voice. And that's one thing that we're reaching out for. The Kansas City Homeless Union is also, I'm sorry, I'm at work. So we are also reaching out to other camps and trying to have everyone under the umbrella of the Kansas City Homeless Union, not just individual members, but actual individual camps. And we are trying to make individual camps autonomous, sovereign camps where, I mean, because the government doesn't represent us. They have essentially made homelessness outlawed. You know, it's illegal to be homeless in this country. You can't be on public property. You can't be loitering. You can't be, you know, begging. You can't be, you know, they make benches with spikes on them so we're not allowed to lay down on them, you know, stuff like that. They have outlawed homelessness. To be homeless is illegal. So they obviously don't represent us. We have no address, so we can't vote. They say we don't pay taxes, but they're wrong about that. We do pay taxes. We pay sales tax every time we purchase something. We just don't pay property taxes because we don't have any private property. Another thing that we're working on, because homelessness isn't just about the people that are already on the streets. It is also about the people that are just one, two, three paychecks away from homelessness. We're talking about pretty much anyone you know. If you are not in the top 5% of the earning income people in America, you are maybe three paychecks away from homelessness. And that is an alarming statistic that people need to take into account. That is where people like KC Tenants come into play. Now, KC Tenants is there to try and ensure that anyone who needs a home can have a home. And we're not talking about just a roof over your head or the floor falls out beneath you. We're talking about safe, affordable, accessible housing for everyone. Because a lot of these houses, a lot of these homes are being taken away due to tax abatements that have expired. And these people who were taking advantage of the tax abatements and creating these low rents have now either sold out to large conglomerates, even out-of-town slumlords, who come in, throw a coat of paint on it, and then raise the rent, you know, anywhere from 35 to like 130%. That is not a joke. That is an actual number. Or, you know, because the tax abatements expire, they raise the rent themselves. Now, these are people who have been members of the community for X amount of years. Some of these people have been there for 12, 20, however many years. They've been members of the community. They've been, you know, they've created something. They've built something there. These people are actually, you know, affected by, you know, these changes, these decisions that are made in boardrooms far away. And while those decisions made in boardrooms are really just based upon the pocketbook of a person, those decisions affect the very lives of the people who actually live in these homes. Their homes, they are lives, these are people. And it shouldn't be affected by someone's pocketbook. It shouldn't be about how much money you're going to make off of this. It should be about what kind of a community you're going to build around this. And that's another thing that we're working with. So we're working with KC Tenants to have affordable, accessible housing for everyone. And this means helping to prevent homelessness on the other side. So we have one side working with the people who are already homeless. We have the others with working with people who are on the verge of homelessness. We have others working with people who could potentially become homeless at any moment. You know, and then we have the prevention of homelessness itself. So there's a lot of angles that we're working with.
Well, that's a lot. So someone can become homeless at any time of the day. I mean, it can be 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the morning. So you're finding people at all times of the day that it's their first experience, their first night on the streets. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just met a guy today. It was his third day of homelessness. He had never been on the streets before. He clearly had some form of learning disability. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't know where to go. He had no one to trust, no one to rely on. And he came to the Kansas City Homeless Union looking for help. And we were there for him. And I was grateful for that. I was glad that he had somewhere that he could go to that he could trust. And that's what we do. Homelessness affects everyone, anyone that you know. Look around, look outside, look out your window. Anyone can be affected by homelessness, can become homeless at any moment through no fault of their own. So the stigma that is commonly attached to homelessness is not the kind of thing that is genuine. This is the same kind of stigma that they landed on people during the civil rights movement, you know, claiming that, you know, or the same kind of stigma they put on Mexicans when they were coming across the border in large numbers. It's false information that creates a barrier for people to be able to be forward moving. So a lot of the things that people think about the homeless, that they're lazy, that they're, shiftabouts, that they're all drug addicts, that this is all their own fault, that they just don't want to work, that they don't want to live better, this is all bogus. Some of these people are families that just got kicked out of their homes because the landlord wanted to rent to somebody else for a higher, couldn't legally raise the rent. Or they lost their home because the landlord did raise the rent perfectly legally and they couldn't afford it for no reason. Some of them are on fixed incomes. We're talking about grandmothers that have retired that can't afford standard one-bedroom apartments because the rent has gone so high that these people have nowhere to go. They have no family left because they've aged out, that everyone around them that they knew has passed on, and they're the only one alive that they have left. You know, logical, reasonable things happen to people all the time, and you can't just assume that you know, everyone falls under an individual category of drug abuse and laziness, and, you know, it's not that at all. While some do fall under that category, the fact is the rest do not. And you have to understand that statistically speaking, the numbers don't add up. All homeless people are not like that. All homeless people could be anybody. It could be your mom. It could be your sister. It could be your brother. It could be you.
Yeah, the stigma that is created, it's an organized attack against the working class, particularly the homeless that once they can no longer work those jobs, you know, as mechanics and things like that, or they have an injury that puts them out. That's for 3 years before they can recover.
We have working homeless as well. We have working homeless as well. There are perfectly logical people out there who are working full-time, 40-hour a week plus jobs, and those jobs are not enough to pay the rent. Some of these people have 4 kids, 5 kids, 3 kids, 1 kid. You know what I'm saying? And because of the cost of rent and life, they cannot afford these things and have become homeless. It is a standard, normal thing. I see it all the time.
Yeah. Well, you're doing great work, Lulu, and we really appreciate you calling in because you provide an insight that we're not seeing, because when you're not working, you're out there in the camps doing the real work. How many
I
more
just
people?
Got this job.
Oh, okay. So if what can people do to volunteer to help the homeless union?
We have a lot of stuff going on right now. We're working on a bid to put forth to the city right now for an emergency help for due to the cold weather, the inclement weather coming up, because this is supposed to be a really bad winter, and the city has nothing planned. The city has no plan of attack to protect these people. They have no intention of opening anything like Bartle Hall. They have no intention of spending any kind of money like that. People will die this winter if nothing is done. So we have a lot of disorganization. And so the Kansas City Homeless Union is putting forth a bid on emergency relief for homeless people to ensure that, you know, as few people are harmed as possible. So we're looking at, you know, goods, services, things like that for the people that are already out there to try and save lives. We're doing that. You can volunteer if you get a hold of us on Facebook at KC Homeless Union. You can do that. Or if you'd like to make a monetary donation, we also have – we are a 501c3. We do have that designation. So you can make a cash donation if you'd like to at Cash App Hug Your Hood, Inc. That's Cash App, HUGYOHOODINC, Hug Your Hood, Inc.
Now that the weather's cooling down, what has changed about your daily routine working with the camps?
Not a whole lot. What has changed is the type of things that we bring. Instead of always focusing on food or tarps and tents, we're focusing on coats, blankets, still bringing in food, tarps, and tents, of course, but instead of working on other sundry items that they may need, we're focusing on warm items to try and keep them alive.
Yes, yes. And
I really appreciate your time tonight. I do have to go back to work now. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm truly grateful. I want to say what's up to Gaddafi. Thanks for having me in the Kansas City Homeless Union.
All right.
And
all
thank
right.
you guys for having me on tonight.
Thank you, Lulu.
Thank you, Lulu. Yeah.
Lulu Livingston from KC Homeless Union. She just got a new job. She just got a new phone. And she took out the time to call us and say hello and give us an update what's going on the streets of Kansas City. And it's really important to remain engaged and do the work of movement building. And Kansas City Homeless Union has been around for 18 months now. Did you know that, Mike? 18 months.
No, I'm Mike. Really impressed with Lulu's reports. I'm impressed with the activity. You know, there are so many people live out in the country who, some of the people I know might as well qualify as homeless in the country, compared to the conditions that they're talking about. I mean, it's really interesting to hear the Newsom Lulu in the city talking about the homeless conditions, because there are people like that out here. They're living in RVs around Lake Perry, and they live there year round, and they really have nowhere else to go. And there are places they call around the lake that which are little campgrounds and stuff, and there are people that live out there. I drive by and visit with them every once in a while. Used to, I haven't this winter, but it's out there. It really is. It's a world that nobody knows about, really, out here. So I appreciate Lulu coming on, man.
And so these aren't the nomadic vagabonds. These are people that are staying at Lake Perry, in the Lake Perry area of is that Jefferson County?
Yeah, and it borders Douglas County, and it's sort of strange because they're not nomads. Well, they're nomads, but they don't have anything. You know, they maybe they worked out a deal to live in the RV or the camping trailer, you know, during the winter, and they're constantly dodging. You know, it's like, you know, they're dodging anybody from knowing they're living there. And then there's whole estates that the county government is constantly trying to sweep through. You know, Lulu talking about the sweep to these camps, and you in your news report earlier, it sounds I know the Jefferson County cops mainly will not engage in that kind of behavior because they know what they're doing. They know it's not cool. It's just not bad. It's bad. You know, these people have nowhere to go. And why should we kick them out, you know? So they don't enforce it. But the county government goes after these, these people who don't pay their taxes on these little lots. We're talking about a lot along the lake that's like, you know, feet by 40 feet or something. It's just a little piece of ground that big enough you could put a trailer on or something like that. And the county's constantly, you know, collecting taxes and selling and reselling these lots. And it's sort of a thing of gossip out here about, you know, because everybody knows, but they don't say it, that there's a lot of homeless people that live on those areas, on those lots. And they're just not, you know, it's really pathetic, you know, if you ask me, that the government busies and the local newspapers busy themselves with not covering the homeless that live on those lots, but covering the taxes due on those lots. You know what I mean? It's sort of sick, you know. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Because poverty is another thing that's not really talked about, and it's just so prevalent right
here,
now.
It doesn't even exist out here. If you read the newspaper, the local newspapers, or especially the newspapers, it's all just happy 4-H news, cowgirl winning a ribbon, you know, happy people. And it's just, they avoid it, talking about it. I don't know about, you can't do it in Kansas City. You can't avoid it, evidently. I mean, you've got these sweeps going through these. Didn't you say one was at the Paseo just recently, this week or last week?
Yeah, this is a heavily desired gentrification effort. You know, Starbucks, all these big chains want that corner now. It's Independence Avenue and the Paseo. So you've got exits off like I-29 and exit off 71 and I-70. 670 starts right there.
Yeah. That's that part of the downtown loop. Yeah.
And Kansas City Homeless Union is one that began making an effort to make homelessness visible.
Right.
Go ahead.
I've read that the only reason I knew about it is because the Kansas City Star every once in a while would have these pretty big articles, really, about the people, what's going on, and what Lucas is doing about it. And it's not a lot of news coverage, but it's more than we get out here in our county weekly. No kidding, it's a lot more than what we get out here in the county news weekly papers. It's sort of, and I know I can't help but think it's that way throughout Kansas in the rural areas, that they just don't acknowledge that there are homeless people, you know, living. You know, it's sort of a hidden. It's hidden. There's no other way to describe it. It's really hidden.
It's atomization, because these folks out there in the rural areas think, well, it must just be me. My moral, gauge is pretty low. Had I, you know, done something better, and there's nothing you could have fucking done. There's not, you know, other than pick up and run and get the hell out of there. If somebody would have said that, you know, maybe that, you know, when they were physically able to run. But then they, you know, you're going to wind up in Kansas City and you know, it's two or three years of hard scrabble to get up, get an apartment and get a car. You know, you might be going and doing some janitorial work two or three times and, you know, maybe you can get on with the federal government. And, you know, capitalism is just wringing your bones like grease.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's crushing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and, I've been there for brief times in my life. I was that way, and I think that's how I can sort of figure out where they're at in Jefferson County, and why, you know, because I know what it's like to have to find a place to survive when you really don't have a car and no way to go anywhere, really. So it's a real mess, but it's hidden out here very, very successfully, if you can call that success. I mean, you wouldn't know about it unless you went out and looked for it. It's sort of pathetic because some people, families will do that to family members. Oh, he's no good. Just let him, you know, or she's no good. And it's pretty pathetic. But Lulu really provided some news. Do you want me to play the news report? I think you have another one. Something UTC, is that the one we're supposed to play next?
Oh yeah, I probably misspelled it, but yeah, that was Unite the Right trial this week, and I kind of covered some Twitter posts and some news articles about some of the trials this week. Go ahead.
All right, here we go, folks. You listen to Carl G. Again, area code 646-716-8652, and I'm looking for the clip right now, so hold on, bear with me. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble finding it. What is this? Oh, yeah, here it is.
Unite the Right.
We'll be back with you.
Molly Conger, Socialist Dog Mom, goes on to reply, Judge Moon has already ruled that Jeff Shoup's alleged change of heart is not an admissible defense in the allegations, but has said it may be relevant to the assessment of punitive damages. Plaintiffs have filed a letter asking for reconsideration. And this letter goes on to say, the plaintiffs say Mr. Shoup has never publicly renounced nor made any effort to remedy the specific racially motivated violence and intimidation that occurred at Unite the Right. To the contrary, Mr. Shoup insists that neither he nor any member of the Nationalist Socialist Movement, also known as neo-Nazis, or the Nationalist Front, did anything wrong at Unite the Right. Thus, Mr. Shoup's testimony, Mr. Shoup has never publicly renounced nor made any efforts to remedy the specific racial motivated violence and intimidation that occurred at Unite the Right. To the contrary, Mr. Shoup insists that neither he nor any member of the NSM or Nationalist Front did anything wrong at Unite the Right. Thus, Mr. Shoup's testimony will serve only one purpose. It will be from an improper character testimony intended to rehabilitate his character. And Molly Conger at Socialist Dog Mom went on to comment, Signs versus Kessler trial, live retweets, master thread. Each of the following posts will contain the date, the minute entry from the docket, and a link to my thread with the live tweets from that day of the trial. In Twitter news, Chad Loader, they them, 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, November 16, 2021, tweeted, The archives don't lie. Katie Davis Court deleted several incriminating tweets about her presence with the writers in D.C. on January 6th. Was she hoping that her presence in the crowd would go unnoticed? Was she hiding evidence of federal crimes? Says Loader. From KMBC News, Channel 9, Kansas City, a jury to begin deliberations at Kyle Rittenhouse murder trial by Michael Tarm, Amy Forlidi, and Tammy Weber at the Associated Press. Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jurors will begin deliberations Tuesday at Kyle Rittenhouse's murder trial after 2 weeks of testimony, in which prosecutors and defense attorneys painted starkly different pictures of his actions the night he shot three men on the streets of Kenosha, Wisconsin. Prosecutors claim in closing arguments Monday that Rittenhouse was a wannabe soldier who provoked bloodshed by bringing a semi-automatic rifle to a protest and menacing others, then walking off like a hero in a Western after killing two men and wounding a third. That Rittenhouse acted in self-defense after being ambushed by a crazy person who he feared would wrest away his gun and use it to kill him. Jurors listened to a full day of arguments before being told to return Tuesday morning for the start of deliberations in the case that has stirred fierce debate in the U.S. over guns, vigilantism, and law and order. 18 jurors have been hearing the case. The 12 who will decide Rittenhouse's fate and the 6 who will be designated alternatives will be determined by drawing from a raffle drum. Rittenhouse then 17 shot two men to death and wounded a third during a tumultuous night of protests against the racial injustice of the summer of 27. Rittenhouse said he went to Kenosha from his home in Antioch, Illinois, to protect property from rioters in the days after a black man, Jacob Blake, was shot by white Kenosha police officers. Rittenhouse, a former police youth cadet, is a wannabe soldier who was looking for a trouble that night, repeatedly showing the jury drone video that he said depicted Rittenhouse pointing an AR rifle weapon at demonstrators. This is provocation. This is what starts the incident, prosecutor declared. You lose the right to self-defense when you're the one who brought the gun, when you're the one creating the danger, when you're the one provoking other people, like a hero in a Western, without a care in the world for anything who just won, Binger said. The defense, though, said Rittenhouse was set up on by the mob. Richards accused prosecutors of using the term active shooter for Rittenhouse because the loaded connotation of that word. Supporters have hailed Rittenhouse as a hero who took stand against lawlessness, foes, and have branded him a vigilante. Earlier Monday, Judge Bruce Schroeder dismissed a count of possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under 18, a misdemeanor that appeared to be among the likeliest of the charges to net a conviction. It carries out 9 months in jail. The defense argued that Wisconsin law has an exception related to the length of a weapon's barrel. After prosecutors conceded Rittenhouse's rifle was not short-barreled, the judge threw out the charge. Perhaps in recognition of weaknesses in the case, prosecutors asked the judge to let the jury consider several lesser charges if they acquit him in the original counts. Schroeder agreed to do as he delivered some 36 pages of legal instructions to the jury. In his instructions, the judge said that to accept Rittenhouse's claim of self-defense, the jury must find that he believed there was an unlawful threat to him and that the amount of force he used was reasonable and necessary. With a verdict near, Governor Tony Evers said that 500 National Guard members would be prepared for duty in Kenosha if the local law enforcement requested them. Los Angeles Times, June 17, 1993. Special thanks to the New York Times. Sister Soldier, the New York raptivist whose militant black nationalist views were criticized by Democratic presidential candidate Bill Clinton last weekend, said today she is not a racist and has never promoted the killing of white people. I do not advocate the murder of anybody, Soldier said in a telephone interview from New York Tuesday. Not white people, not black people. That charge is absolutely ridiculous. In the quote he referred to, I was speaking of the mindset of a gang member. Soldier's comment came in the aftermath of a controversy that erupted Saturday when the Arkansas governor criticized the rapper as a racist for comments she made in a Washington Post interview, including, if black people kill black people every day, why not have a week to kill white people? Clinton used an appearance before Reverend Jesse Jackson's Rainbow People Coalition to criticize Soldier, comparing her comments to remarks by former Ku Klux Klan Klansman David Duke. Jackson later expressed indignation at Bill Clinton's remarks. On Tuesday, Soldier, who says her name means soldier or fighter, responded at a New York press conference and in interviews that she does not take kindly being criticized by a racist, by a politician, who publicly apologizes for playing golf in an exclusive all-white country club. Bill Clinton, says Sister Soldier, is a racist like David Duke, a well-known Klan member and white supremacist. But Clinton was a member of an all-white segregated club up until this year, she said. He says that he's not a racist, but he tries to distance himself from Jesse Jackson, a leader who has registered more voters and serves in the interest of poor blacks, whites, Latinos, labor unions, and farmers. I'm a drug-free, alcohol-free, independent black businesswoman. I am very well-educated and very well-traveled, and yet white America has a problem with me. Born Lisa Williamson, the raptivist grew up on welfare and public housing projects in New York and New Jersey. Before signing up in 1991 for a brief stint with the New York rap group Public Enemy, she founded two youth organizations and promoted a series of hip-hop concerts at New York's Apollo Theater to finance a summer camp for homeless children. Clinton said that after his speech, he chose to criticize Soldier's remarks because she has a big influence on a lot of people. But Soldier, whose 360 Degrees of Power album was released in March on Epic Records, characterized Bill Clinton's attack on her as just the latest in a recent series of anti-rap attacks. Bill Clinton obviously knows nothing about rap music. I am a new rap artist with a record that only has been on the market for 3 months and has only sold 60,000 albums, whose videos are banned on MTV. Anytime an African man or woman takes a strong stand for the development and control over their lives, white America has an insensitive and irrational reaction, Soldier said. America has a problem with African people, whether they're directing films, making records, or controlling their own businesses. They reacted to artists such as Ice Cube, KRS-One, Public Enemy, John Singleton, and Spike Lee, so I guess I'm in good company. Los Angeles rapper Ice Cube, who appears on Social's upcoming Killing Me Softly single, was widely criticized last year for promoting racism on his Death Certificate album and a song called Black Korea, in which attacks Korean merchants for not showing respect for black customers. Professor Griff, a former member of the New York rap group Public Enemy, was also accused of racial bigotry after making anti-Semitic remarks in a 1989 interview in the Washington Times. Public Enemy came under fire in January when the group featured white politicians being assassinated by black rappers in its By the Time I Get to Phoenix video. In another recent controversy, several police organizations around the nation, including Los Angeles Police Protective League, calls for Time Warner Incorporated to voluntarily stop distribution of rapper Ice-T's Cop Killer, a song they believe advocates violence against police officers. I am very familiar with police brutality, she said. Police violence is a regular event in the black community. It's as regular as brushing your teeth. The people have a hostile attitude towards men in our community. They move to cover up their own insecurities by beating and whipping black men and lodging false charges against them, knowing that when it goes to court, white supremacy is then reinforced by the judge and the jury. It is a system that is capitalizing off the enslavement of African people. Soldier called Bill Clinton a hypocritical, draft-dodging, pot-smoking womanizer. Bill Clinton is using me as a political football, the Democratic version of Willie Horton, said Soldier, referring to the campaign ads run during 1988 presidential campaign by then Republican candidate George Bush, as cited the case of a black convicted killer who raped a woman while on furlough from a Massachusetts prison. It was a poor excuse for a candidate who has not presented America with any substantive comprehensive agenda regarding economic development, foreign policy, budget containment, or social policy. He was trying to scare white people to mobilize them into action. Police response. The National Black Police Association criticized law enforcement groups calling for a boycott of Ice-T's label. Anarchism and the Black Revolution, theanarchistlibrary.org, by Lorenzo Comboa Irving. How the capitalists use racism. The fate of the white working class has always been bound with the condition of black workers. Going as far back as the American colonial period when black labor was first imported into America, black slaves and indentured servants have been oppressed right along with whites of the lower classes. But when European indentured servants joined with black rebels against their lot in the late 1600s, the property class decided to free them by giving them a special status as whites and thus stake in the system of oppression. Material incentives, as well as newly elevated social statuses to ensure these lower classes' allegiance. The invention of white race and racial slavery of the Africans went hand in glove, and is how the upper classes maintained order during the period of slavery. Even poor whites had aspirations of doing better, since their social mobility was ensured by the new system. This social mobility, however, was on the backs of the African slaves who were super exploited. But the die had been cast in the dual-tier form of labor, whose exploitation the Africa, but also trapped white labor. When they sought to organize unions or for higher wages in the North or South, white laborers were slapped down by the rich and used enslaved black labor as their primary mode of production. The so-called free labor of the white worker did not stand a chance. Although capitalists used the system of white skin privilege to great effect to divide the working class, the truth is that capitalists only favored white workers to use them against their own interests, not because there was true white class unity. The capitalists didn't want white labor united with blacks against their rule and the system of exploitation of labor. The invention of the white race was a scam to facilitate this exploitation while workers were brought off to allow their own wage slavery and the African super exploitation. They struck a deal with the devil, which hampered all efforts at class unity for the last four centuries. The continual subjugation of masses depends on competition and internal disunity. As long as discrimination exists and racial or ethnic minorities are oppressed, the entire working class is oppressed and weakened. This is so because the capitalist class is able to use racism to drive down the wages of individual segments of the working class by inciting racial antagonism and forcing a fight for jobs and services. The division is a development that ultimately undercuts the living standards of all workers. Moreover, by pitting whites against blacks and other oppressed nationalities, the capitalist class is able to prevent workers from uniting against their common class enemy. As long as the workers are fighting each other, capitalist class rule is secure. If an effective resistance is to be mounted against the current racist offensive of the capitalist class, the utmost solidarity between workers of all races is essential, and the way to defeat the capitalist strategy is for white workers to defend the democratic rights won by blacks and others oppressed people after decades of hard struggle, and to fight to dismantle the system of white skin privilege. White workers should support and adopt the concrete demands of the black movement and should work to abolish the white identity entirely. The white workers should strive for multicultural unity and should work with black activists to build an anti-racist movement to challenge white supremacy. However, it is only important to recognize the right of the black movement to take an independent road in its own interest. That's what self-determination means.
Katharina Yakov, long before she took that name, was organizing workers in Hamburg just the same. Organizing beneath the flag of deepest red, a new dawn of peace and freedom clearly shining in her head. Katharina Yakov first was sent to jail when the trappings of democracy all began to fail. She was frequently arrested in and out of custody while her first husband was in hiding from the Nazis. Katharina Yakov was acquitted of a crime, but the Gestapo had the last word. They weren't finished with her this time. She was sent to Ravensbrück, a killing hunger at her side. She heard of the execution, how her second husband died. For Katharina Yakov, the end was close at hand. She was on a death march with a ragged, starving band. Marching through a forest, being led by the SS. What would happen hours later seemed impossible to guess. When the sun came the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Yakov thought about her children and the friends and comrades taking care of them, not knowing yet if any of them survived, not knowing that soon she'd see her daughters both alive. Katharina Yakov watched the German soldiers flee, streaming from the east, that's what she would see. Allied bombers flew above them, she thought they all might die, and then soon there was the silence of all the SS men. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Yakov saw red flags flapping in the breeze above the Russian tanks, and she fell upon her knees. And so many different voices in so many different tongues sang the most beautiful song that could ever have been sung. In German, Lithuanian, in Polish, and in Dutch, a myriad of melodies has never had been such. In Russian and in Yiddish, Italian and French, emerging from the forest beneath the trench. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Völker hört die Signale auf zum letzten Gefecht. Die Internationale erkämpft das Menschenrecht. Völker hört die Signale auf zum letzten Gefecht. Die Internationale erkämpft das Menschenrecht.
The Pledge of Allegiance by Utah Phillips. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the multinational corporations and to the profit for which they stand. One interlocking directorate. Under no government, indivisible, with monopoly and cheap labor for all.
We march in formation, lockstep, in cadence, so that their bodies don't betray their fear by jerky, hesitant motions. Head straight, on order, by order, so that the folder cannot confirm under certain eyes. They make noises. Hut two, to think. Hut two, and whatever they are told, instead of possible death. And they think of dying anyway, even though they are used to thinking whatever they are told. And they think they should be honored for this. And they shall be, increasingly, with grenades, lockstep. Kwasi Balagun, December 22nd, 1946, December 13th, 1986. Black Panther, member of the BLA, New African Anarchist.
All right, BLA, that's Black Liberation Army. Is that right? On there we have Hibachi Lamar. You there?
Yep, I'm here, Carl. Yeah, that's the Black Liberation Army.
Yeah, that was a good one. And you sent that to me on the phone the other day. And so I sampled it and put it with the Pledge of Allegiance to the corporate America. And I think it worked pretty good, because you wouldn't have corporate America if you didn't have mass incarceration and enslavement of black people for 400 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, let me now the last clip that we had, we were talking about the Charlottesville hearing and then the Rittenhouse hearing. We kind of gone through a lot of that, and some people, I had a friend that was so depressed over the Rittenhouse verdict, I had to find some celebrity gossip to take her mind off of it. But just by luck, I don't even want to talk about it yet, because it was really a bad situation that happened out in California, and it was just disclosed Friday evening. So anyway, you know, to get people just to walk away from that to that trial in Minnesota, for me, I just can't focus on it too much. So I work with, the homeless all week, and, we're working on, getting housing and actually getting homeless people to build or remodel housing and start to rehab some of these houses. And it's been the first week that we feel that we can possibly get this done. Starting, I'd like to be able to start do it tomorrow and get all the gas hookups and everything, but we're actually writing out a plan how to do this, and how many men or women it takes to remodel a house, and can we do 10 houses at a time? That's our goal, and so that kept me away from a lot of the trials and stuff, and so I'll just grab a news story, and when I find something that I think is informative, then I just record it and put it in our news clip. So,
well, that's,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No,
sticking you on that tail end of that Pledge Lamar. Is that from a poem or something you wrote earlier? That's pretty neat, Lamar.
That's not from me. That was from Kwasi Balagun.
Okay.
That was from his book, The Soldier's Story. Yeah, writings from a New African Anarchist.
That is sweet. That is great stuff, man. I mean, here we are doing this show live, and people are listening, but maybe. Maybe we could get some more of that on air with the help of Carl. Carl, that was pretty clever. That's very clever, Carl.
Well, so we were. Yeah, we were Lamar and I were discussing, you know, things to put on the show, and I told him, I said, if something comes to your mind, Lamar, just call me and put it on my voicemail.
Yeah. That's very clever.
Yeah, that's you know, that synchronicity, you know. And what you were saying earlier, a couple minutes ago, that's something that we particularly have doing Chicago, for example. And I think that people, that it would be beneficial for people who's trying to fight homelessness and houselessness, you know, to understand and to have, you know, to know about, you know, just having a connection with people, you know, people on the streets, people who's houseless, other human beings, like the lady was saying, you know, it could be you, you know. There's in Atlanta, when I was in Atlanta, you know, there was a whole family that got foreclosed on by Chase, you know, by Chase Bank. And, you know, we're talking about a home with, you know, kids, you know, under 15, you know, you see pictures on the mantle with grandmama and everything on that, and foreclosed on. So it had a huge sign hanging down, no banks, no landlords, with a brolic circle A on it, you know. And the demonstrators went to Chase Bank, and the Chase manager at a Chase Bank, you know. So what's your call it, man, if, you know, that was a, you know, that was a run, you know. And so having these connections with people, you know, having what we call phone trees, you know, where somebody knows how to put on electricity or something, you know, the person's number, you know, another person who knows how to has a water key and knows how to put water on, you know, these are elements of life. You know, water is something that, you know, determines whether or not life is accessible on other planets. You know, it's, you know, so these fundamental things that come from nature that people are forced by capitalists to pay for, you know, they could be directly in the hands of the people ourselves, you know. So having these things, you know, and these, you know, and thinking about these kind of principles, like, you know, they, you know, can have a life-giving effect on humanity. And, you know, there's a lot of people who could be helped, you know, like we were talking about, you know, there's people that are shivering right now, you know, people that's, think of this, you know, if you got foreclosed, you know, whoever's listening, you know, got foreclosed on, or their home was in a fire and was forced to, you know, live underneath a bridge, whatever bridge you may be thinking about in your city as you listen to this right now. You know, think about if that was you, you know what I'm saying, if that was your kids, you know, and how for every one houseless person, there's five non-condemnable units in the country. You know, for every one person, there's five, you know, so there should be no reason why anyone's houseless. You know, it's all about paper. People want, the capitalist class wanting to make profits instead of caring about, enough about the people, you know, caring at all about the people, frankly, you know. So these are important things to consider when laying back on your bed at night with fingers folded behind our heads, you know. So, yeah.
No, I think the first time I met you, Lamar, you were doing a thing about liberating houses in Chicago, because there's so many vacant houses in Chicago. I don't know if people realize that. Can you talk about all the vacant houses? Because, like, all the old World War II vets died, like, overnight.
Yeah, it's like in the Shy, you know, like, there's so many abandoned buildings. Like, I live in Englewood. I, you know, like, our liberation school in Englewood, it's a it's a community, you know, where you're talking about tens of thousands of people. It's like 70-some thousand people in it. And block after block after block after block after block of abandoned buildings. And you got all these houseless people, kids, you know what I'm saying, you know, playing on the drums and, you know what I'm saying, like panhandling on the subways, you know what I'm saying, you know, children, you know, you know, we see on TV and stuff, you know what I'm saying, like in other countries, you know, how they're hungry and how, you know, other people's hungry and cold and out, you know, and things like that, you know, flies and things like that. And, you know, and the way the media puts it, they have it, people in other countries thinking that there's streets of gold over here, like there's literally streets made out of gold. One of the Haymarket martyrs spoke of that, you know, when he spoke of before he came over to this country, and that when he came over, how he's seen all sorts of forms of misery, you know, and, you know, all types of evils and stuff, you know. So, so when people experience, and when people experience these things themselves, you know, such as myself, you know, my mom and I, you know, we squatted, you know, when I was a kid, you know, at least two abandoned buildings we lived in, you know, no running water, no lights, you know, the building on Spring Garden Street, you know, was tilted diagonally, so you get vertigo. I used to get vertigo when looking out, you know, out the window, thinking I could just, you know, jump out and land on my feet, you know what I'm saying? And so it's, these are conditions, you know, that breed anarchists, that breed people who don't want to be governed no more and held under these conditions. You know, it breeds people who, once they, you know, they may not know a lot. We go through trial and error because a lot of us don't have no fathers and stuff like that around. So a lot of the, you know, we learn through trial and error, you know, but then when we, like, get knowledge of things, you know, we get, like, whiff of a book, you know, it becomes intoxicating. You know, we become inebriated with the aroma of revolt. You know, and we start reading things like Kawasi. We start reading things like Lorenzo, you know, Lorenzo's materials. You know, we start listening to podcasts that's revolutionary alternatives to, you know, shit like CNN. You know what I mean? So that's you know, and people, you know, people in homeless camps, you know, it's all over. You know, there's so much houselessness. Like I said, for every one houseless person, five non-condemnable units that each of them could live in. Five for every one, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's no need for homelessness. This austerity has been going on, and, since for 40 years, you know, and this is, you know, correlates with the killing of black and brown people by police. Mass incarceration was building. So the capital is there. The capitalists just want to, they just don't want to invest in the future of humans. I mean, Jeff Bezos last week just said all industry will be in outer space and the planet will be a resort. And it's like, oh, you know, that sounds like feudalism to me.
That's kind of sick to think about, you know. That's imagine with a little kid, you know, like before people become indoctrinated to the miseducational school system, you know, like kids, you know, we have a certain, you know, we see things in a way that's clear, you know, a lot more clear than we are when we grow up, you know what I'm saying? Where we have to, like, re-educate ourselves into being, listening to our intuition and things like that, instead of, you know, going along with the big fish eat little fish and it's a dog-eat-dog world. And, you know, capitalist philosophies that spill out into the streets where, you know, You have people cutthroating each other for a drug deal, you know, on the corner, you know, in the hood. You have people, you know what I'm saying, mirroring these very same things that were taught, you know, in social studies, you know, to do and things like that. So, yeah, like anti-capitalist education, you know, is essential.
Well, yeah, you know, and you do a lot of zines. It seems like if you're not working on your book, you're putting a zine together, and you have an amazing technique to be able to do most of it on your phone. And can you talk a little bit about how you can make a zine with an Android?
Yeah, just basically going to, you know, to Word doc and, you know, just, I just go from there, you know, yeah, like, you know, like my first book, The Deprived and Depraved, which is like almost all, like, so we got to get reprints now or something. But, you know, when I wrote that, a lot of it was from are the abandoned building, you know, from the in Englewood. You know, we turned the board up into a base area of resistance. You know, we had preschool teachings going on, you know, where people could come in and teach, you know, schedule something. Okay, on Tuesday you want to talk about, you know, this one, teach someone what you're knowledgeable in. Maybe it's who knows, you know, how to put electricity on or something. You know, next thing you know, there's people with electricity on, you know, and maybe it's something about community gardening. Okay, turn a vacant lot in your hood into a community garden, get some food going, you know. So it's, you know, different things like that. And I didn't have that much, being that I was locked up. And when I was locked up, that's why I became, you know, politically conscious, you know. And, but, so, you know, and in the inside, you know, I didn't have a, you know, I don't know, a laptop exactly, you know. So when I got out, I learned how to use a phone. And that's actually kind of, it's just became more natural to me, to use a phone.
And you read Lorenzo Kimball Irving Inside. How did you find Lorenzo's books?
Oh, wow. I first got introduced to Lorenzo's work. That was actually when I first got introduced to Revolutionary Ideas. And Anthony Racine, who introduced me to, who basically is like responsible for, you know, my education and like the light bulb going on in my mind, you know. You know, he sent me a copy of, first it was Lorenzo's, what was it? A manifesto. It was, he wrote a manifesto, anarchist manifesto. And I was intrigued, you know, and in it, one of the things he was talking about was, that he mentioned was, bringing new society in the shell of the old, you know, which is, you know, which anybody that's familiar with, you know, the IWW, you know, that's one of the things that the IWW is about, you know, is mentioned in the preamble, you know, and of the Constitution of the IWW. So, you know, and then I started reading more. Then he sent me was it Anarchism and the Black Revolution? When I read that, it was a wrap. You know, it was like I was doing push-ups and everything, sit-ups, you know, and getting up, you know, wiping my head off and then, you know, reading another page, you know, then just getting it in. That was like strength. That was like, yeah. So then
it was like fuel. Fuel,
yeah,
for the fire.
Like shoveling coal into the furnace of my intellect and my it was just great. So then, let me see. Yep. So then when I got out, you know, I was squatting and we liberated a re-liberated a building called Lowercase Collective, which the government demolished it. Now, you know, it's demolished now, but you know, Anthony, you know, we all hooked up and made the connections, and next thing you know, we was doing workshops at, you know, at DePaul, you know, at DePaul University, then like near downtown Chicago, not far, and you know, and then he and Sister Janina Irvin, who's brilliant, like another brilliant powerhouse organizer, Black Panther, revolutionary elder, you know, they recruited me into the Black Autonomy Federation, you know, and yeah, and then, you know, we've been on a road since then doing Let's Organize the Hood meetings. I think we met at one of the Let's Organize the Hood conferences. I don't know, what was that, back in like, I don't know, was that in Memphis or was that in Kansas City?
Yeah, that was Memphis around 2014.
Okay, yeah, yep. Then I got introduced to you and Brianna. It's like, wow, you know, like, wowzers, you know. So that was, so that that was great, you know. And Brother Lorenzo, he's like, yeah. So that's how, you know, and we're still working together. He's about to come out with his, I think it's the fourth edition, either the third or fourth edition of Anarchism and the Black Revolution, you know. And, you know, the previous ones, they keep going like water. It's like, if you want them, like, hurry up and get them because they be gone, you know. That's how much folks are feeling, you know, people who can relate, you know. And, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're talking about liberating housing and stuff like that, and a lot of people think about Athens, Greece, or Hamburg, Germany, but it's going mm-hmm. on in the Midwestern United States, and everybody expects
mm-hmm.
but everybody expects okay. the East Coast to West, everybody expects the East Coast to West Coast to be doing something radical, but there's radical stuff actually going on here, and it's no longer under the surface. It's out front and vocal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, like it was a blast, you know, when we had the one conference, you know, down in Kansas City, and you know, there was that huge community garden, you know, next door to the space, you know, that was like, that was cool, you know, and to see the level of resistance right in the hood, you know, and folks becoming woke, you know, and you know, dialoguing with some of the neighbors, and you know, like, I was like trying to like tiptoe back and forth between being in the conference, like when it was, you know, when I was on the panel or something, and being out in the hood talking with one of your neighbors about one of the vacants that was right there. You know what I'm saying? So it was yeah. So yeah, Kansas City, Kansas City, you know, MO. You know what I'm saying? Like, definitely put on. You know, and yeah.
Well, you know, and Lorenzo mentioned something that when he came to Kansas City, it was the first time people didn't show up to argue with him. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He wound up getting a sore throat from talking so much.
Yeah, he's cool as a fan, but he's serious at the same time. And a lot of, you know what I'm saying, like a lot. Yeah, he gets a lot of flack, you know, and I take my hat off to him literally right now. I took my hat off, so, like for him, for his resilience and to continue uplifting the people despite flack from like even people of his own race. You know of his, you got, and the same thing happened with Ida B. Wells. You know, same thing happened with with W. E. B. Du Bois. You know, with Malcolm. You know, a lot. So it's like this stuff takes strength. You know what I'm saying? It takes love. It takes like a lot. It takes like sincere, burning, iron, searing love. You know what I'm saying? To, you know, the kind that glows. You know, to continue with, to, you know, to continue this fight. And it's you know, words that I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate him keeping on going because, you know, that's my revolutionary elder. He's, you know, one of my revolutionary elders. You know, him, Sister Janina, you know, which was, you know.
And they're keeping going. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to the fourth edition of Anarchism and the Black Revolution. And I don't know the name of the new book, but I know he was around 800 pages, and it's detailed. It's almost like the footnotes of Anarchism and Black Revolution is bigger than the book itself.
It's a compilation of his writings. I'm actually working on putting it together, and that's one of the things I'm working on at the moment with compiling things. And we're working on that, and I'll probably be doing the introduction. I did an introduction under a previous title, but he changed. He decided he liked the title change, so I'm a most likely redo the introduction. You know, waiting to see. You know, I'm waiting to see what title he liked for this particular book. Sister Janina is also like working on something like, yeah, they're phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great. It's that's a resource manual for me, Anarchism and the Black Revolution, and yeah, that was like 1993, I think, or 77, and then a second edition or something was around 93. The one on anarchistlibrary.org. And it's free. You know, you can't. Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you go to eBay, you might pay $400 for one of those copies, but it's free on Anarchist Library. And what is Anthony's? That's Southside Zine Distro, is that right? You got an address for
South Chicago ABC Zine Distro, PO Box 721. Homewood, Illinois, 60430. I know that by heart because writing requesting so many zines, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I was looking around to see if I could find a zine with an address. I was like, I remember it by heart. Yep. Yeah, he's another one of my revolutionary elders, obviously, as stated, you know, like, and his catalog. You can request a free catalog from him. He has over 900 titles. It's somewhere like probably over like 1,100 by now or something. But, you know, and if anybody has any zines or any literature, any artwork, you know, to uplift the people with and to help liberate minds with, feel free to, you know, send a copy through the mail, you know. Again, that's South Chicago ABC Zine Distro, P.O. Box 721, Homewood, Illinois, 60430. And another place folks could send materials to, another badass, like, mind-opening publishing experience is Kansas City IWOC, P.O. Box 414304, Kansas City, Missouri 64141.
All right. All right, that's right. That's the IWOC mailing list, so you can contact us at KansasCityIncarceratedWorker.org if you want to email, or you can drop us a letter at our mailbox. Contact ABC Southside Distro. It's the best way to get engaged. And, you know, for people out in rural Kansas, out in Colorado, Nebraska, you know, we got to connect. We've got to put this federation up and going. It's just like a power grid, and and movement building is a day-to-day process, and it becomes invigorating, and I hear things about burnout and stuff. You know, be careful about burnout and stuff like that. But what I'm experiencing is it actually gives you energy if you pace yourself and you take care of yourself. It's very inspiring, and it really is a part of life that you will look back on and be glad that that you participated at this time. Because what do we have for the seventh generation? What are they going to say about us seven generations from now? What will those folks say about us if we don't struggle and fight and right this wrong and root out this evil? We just it's up to us. It's up to everybody listening.
Yep, and rooting out the evils of society as well as within ourselves. When we do it within ourselves, it just comes natural. It becomes second nature, like breathing. Because, you know, it's like burnout, talk about burnout to somebody that's freezing to death. You know what I'm saying? They willing to, like, I know folks that's, willing to do, a lot, to get something to eat, you know what I'm saying? To get into a place that's warm, So it's
You think about somebody mentioned you think about the how much work it takes to do a college paper or to write a college paper. And people are putting that kind of energy every day into just acquiring, necessary needs to survive the next 48 hours.
Folks, folks, listen to podcasts like this, check out YouTube and stuff to see how to make stoves and stuff like that, with hardly anything, with a soda can, learn how to do these things. And then, each one teach one of folks, learn how to make, you can look on YouTube and learn how to make a compost toilet. You know what I'm saying? Having knowledge and the application of knowledge is what's key.
It's important. We can't do without each other. We have to be teachers. We have to be students. And sometimes we're students, and sometimes we're teachers. But people have to aspire to be able to teach. There's skills that everybody's talents can put together, and it's useful, and everybody counts in this movement. And we got to push on. And KC Homeless Union, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, the IWW, it's really a good place to start. Like membership in IWW is $6 a month, and you can get half of that dues to go to IWOC, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, and so you're engaging in two places. With the IWW, you can learn about the history, what the organizers have done over the years that have worked. There's a organizer training, and now they have a training for trainers, so we can get more people out and do these training sessions that usually are over the weekend. And then with IWOC, what we're doing is letter writing in probably 50 cities, and we got to keep that mail going inside the prisons. We got to keep in touch with those prisoners. We got to know we you know, if they've moved, you know, if they've, you know, what are the conditions? I mean, sometimes we spend weeks calling about leaky roofs in Texas. You know, you don't think about that, but that's, they're covering a lot of square feet, and when, you know, sometimes the heat in Minnesota in the summer, they need air conditioning. But there's all these issues, and you know, and the phone zaps are effective, and okay, Mike, you want to play some music, or are you going to play a news clip, or hey, Mike.
Come up for some air, but they're back on the air now. Carl and Lamar. Jack Klatt, by the way.
Yeah, we covered a lot of stuff. We were talking about the AB's Southside Chicago Zine Distro, anti-racist, that's a racing. And Homewood, Illinois, You know, we talked about contacting IWalk. You know, the go to the IWW website, go to anarchistlibrary.org, and it's a good way to get engaged. And we're out there, and there's people that will return emails and actually help you with information, whether it's environmental issues, labor issues, prison issues, homeless issues. We got it. We're Lamar was talking about setting up a federation between the camps, between the prisons, between the street corners around the world. And so it is a global movement. And Lamar, are you still there?
Yep, still here.
Okay, now, so we got we got 5 minutes left, so we're doing pretty good. And so you say Anthony Racine has, how many zings does he have? 900, is that right?
Over 900. His titles, I'm talking about titles, not zings, I'm talking about titles. And he could, you know, he did, and just to clarify right quick, the majority of, like, well, a lot of what he does is, I don't know if it's the majority or not, but a lot of what he does is just stuff out of his own pocket. Like when he was working as a toll booth operator, you know, he was like, out of his paychecks, you know, paying for the postage and everything, you know. And you're talking about, you know, he'd be responding to, like, I don't know, like 20 letters and up a week, you know. So yeah, like, so, you know, any donations that folks could do, you know, send also to South Chicago ABC and to Kansas City IWOP, like, just having that in mind, you know, out of the love of the struggle, and, like, yeah, you know, why not, like, you know, so at least, you know, maybe a stamp or, you know, or subscribe, you know, to the six, you know, the $6, you know, I'd rather spend it on that than taxes, you know. So it's having this kind of solidarity and mobility, you know, is what propels movements to affect radical change, you know, to keep people from freezing to death. And you know, who never know, this you may be supporting not having to pay for rent in the future, you know, with such a consolidated, federated resistance.
Yeah, because the farm union, the industrial farm workers, they raised money for probably 250 soup kitchens back in the 1930s, because at that time, at that time, said, "Hey, I can be hungry again, you know, when winter comes."
Yeah, hats off to the farmers who've been exploited by the agribusiness folks too. Like, as a city worker who just got laid off of a factory job, I stand in full solidarity with the farmers in the rural areas.
Absolutely, absolutely. They shouldn't have to take up prison jobs to supplement their farming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, their work, you know, is appreciated, and we mm-hmm. certainly hope that we've reached out to Kansas and Iowa and some folks around the areas that want to link up and get involved and learn more about movement building, and maybe even get a zine distro in your area, and we're here to help. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right on.
So this is the Internationale, and the Soviets chose it as their national anthem, and they just removed a few problematic lines that the anarchists had written. But so it's back. The International is back, and it's free again, and free for everyone to sing along, play along, maybe even put it on your ring